court will proceed to the fourth case, Kerschak versus Ashcroft. Mr. Berg.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Roy Alec Berg, and I represent the petitioner in this matter before you, Yaroslav Kushak. Now, as Mr. Kushak is a native of Ukraine and the son of a career police officer in that country, his father was assigned in 1994 to investigate a theft at a radio plant of precious materials. Later, in February 1995, his father was fired from his position. He later left the family home, cautioning his family, telling him he had some problems he had to take care of. Shortly after that, Mr. Kushak and his mother were summoned to a militia station and questioned for 6 hours. Later, the family home was searched by militia officials.
Well, this is everything that this should have been presented to the immigration judge.
Your Honor, it was in the application and the affidavit that was submitted to the INS and became part of the record when the INS referred the matter to the immigration judge.
But he had a chance to testify, and he booted it.
Well, Your Honor, the hearing that had been scheduled for August 27, 1999, was clearly set solely for the purpose of the adjustment hearing. It had been scheduled for 4 o'clock that afternoon in response to Mr. Azulay's motion that he had filed in August, on August 13th, after Mr. Kushak's visa became available. In any event, if I may continue, Your Honor.
But if he was there, he could have testified, and if he didn't, he could have made an offer of proof. He didn't do either.
Well, he was there, Your Honor. As I said,
he could have testified, and if not, if he wasn't prepared, he could have made an offer of proof then or later. He didn't have other witnesses. Very poorly handled by his lawyers, not you, but by the lawyers, his earlier set of lawyers.
Your Honor, the decision made by Mr. Azulay and his associate, Ms. Chow, I would submit the conclusion they reached when the motion was granted was a reasonable one. Perhaps it could have been handled differently. But as this court said in Gwenchef, that a immigrant or an alien in this case should not be penalized by the decisions or actions or inactions of his attorney. I believe he did have a compelling case.
But you don't, first, you can't have it both ways. You're not accusing the lawyer. You're not arguing ineffective assistance.
Because, Your Honor, I don't believe in the facts of this case, in the context of this case, that it was unreasonable for Mr. Azulay to conclude when he received the notice that the hearing on his motion for adjustment of status was set for 4 o'clock in the afternoon, that anything else but the adjustment was going to go forward. Now, at the hearing earlier that year, when Ms. Chow appeared before Judge Zerbe, she explained the situation to Judge Zerbe and said, Your Honor, he has won the visa lottery. We agree his number is not yet reached, but it may well be reached before the end of the fiscal year. And she asked Judge Zerbe, should I now file the application for adjustment of status in the event it's reached? And Judge Zerbe said he did not think there was an appropriate use of Mr. Kushak's money to do so. She said, well, what if the number is reached? And Judge Zerbe said that she should file a motion, and he'd be inclined to set the matter for, and these are his words at page 88 of the record, he would set the matter for adjustment hearing before the fiscal year. Adjustment hearing. And he didn't say, and be prepared to do everything else that day. So the hearing is set for November 1999, after the end of the fiscal year, and as you know, Judge Flom, in your concurrence in Adir, you talked about how, you know, if you don't get it done within the year, it's mooted out. So when the number was reached and the State Department issued its September 1999 numbers, as they always do, the prior month, usually about the 13th or the 15th.
But you're still not responding. That is, where was the offer of proof? What reason do we have to think that there was an actual miscarriage of justice?
Your Honors, there was the asylum application and the affidavit. It is in the record. And it has his affidavit as to what happened. Now, Judge Zerbe insisted that Mr. Azulay go forward. And I would submit, Your Honor, that at that point in time...
But if the only evidence besides the application would be Khrushchev's actual testimony, why didn't he just get up there and testify?
Mr. Azulay made a strategic decision that he needed more time to prepare.
To do what? there are no other witnesses.
At the master calendar hearing, Ms. Chow said she didn't think there were going to be any, but at this hearing, Mr. Azulay said that there were going to be another witness.
Where are the other witnesses? We're still waiting. Where is the offer of proof? Where is the reason for us to think that this is anything more than stalling tactics and that he actually has any evidence to present that he, besides his testimony?
Your Honor, I don't believe there was...
You haven't mentioned any witnesses, have you?
I'm not aware of what witnesses Mr. Azulay had.
But look, when you want to show a miscarriage of justice, you know, denial of due process, you have to tell the court what you would have done if you had had, you know, the time you wanted. And you haven't done that.
Your Honor, the witness, the main witness, if it is only Mr. Cruzek or the only witness, was not prepared to testify at that time.
That's what I believe, that he was the only witness. And I don't know why he wasn't as prepared on that day as he would have been on any other day.
Well, the hearing for that was set, Your Honor, for November 1999. Mr. Azulay was not stalling. When the number became current, he had to have the matter completed before the end of the fiscal year.
But if the immigration judge, even if he's being hasty and so forth, he says, look, let's get this over with. Let's have our asylum hearing. You have one witness. He's here. Let's hear from him. These are relatively informal proceedings compared to judicial proceedings. So why not just, you know, hear what he has to say?
It may be informal, but it's also a life and death situation, Your Honor. Mr. Azulay received a notice.
There's no other witnesses. There's just Cruzek.
Yeah, but Mr. Cruzek had been prepared to testify on the adjustment application.
What is his preparation? You mean he has to be coached before he can testify about his asylum application?
Not necessarily coached, but necessarily asked and told what he's going to be facing, both in direct and cross-examination and questioning by the immigration judge. But I believe it was reasonable for Mr. Azulay to conclude that when he received the notice scheduling it for 4 o'clock that day, that Judge Zerbe was going to have what he had talked about in March, an adjustment hearing, if the number was reached.
And why was it reasonable at that point? Because of the time of day?
I would say, first, because of the time of day, number one, Your Honor, and also because it was in response to his motion that the matter be advanced, following the instructions what Judge Zerbe had said earlier in the year. The number's reached, file a motion, and I'll be inclined to grant an adjustment hearing.
What would have been the issues at the adjustment hearing?
The issues are, was he eligible for the diversity lottery? In other words, did he have the requirements? Did he either have the equivalent of a high school diploma, or had he worked for 2 years in a position that had required 2 years of experience? And whether or not he had the proper medical, whether his fingerprints had cleared. All of those things were prepared and filed, along with substantial filing fees that Mr. Azulay had filed and had paid and were paid by the petitioner.
Had he received some type of adverse determination from the INS before this came to the... They don't all go to the ALJ, do they?
If you're in deportation or removal proceedings, as the term is used now, Judge Ripple, then an application for adjustment of status to permanent residence, whether it's based on marriage, whether it's based on diversity lottery or employment, the authority is with the immigration judge.
Now, that said, I mean, you also make the statement in your brief that that the usual practice is to bifurcate these.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The usual practice is to bifurcate the adjustment of status and the asylum or withholding of deportation mm-hmm. hearing. Without any citation of authority or what have you, is there anything you could tell us that would back that up?
Well, adjustment of status is a preferable benefit to almost all individuals because it leads to citizenship much quicker.
Yeah.
If a person is granted asylum, they can't even apply for permanent residence for a year, and then they have to wait for both their interview and their number to be current, which can be 5 to 8 years after that. And then after that, they have to wait a period of years before they can become a citizen. So it's a much better benefit in almost all cases for a person to try to become a permanent resident through the diversity lottery.
Why would
But that doesn't go to my question. Mm-hmm. Why is there, what is there to substantiate your assertion in the brief that this is that the current that the custom practice, the practice that attorneys are used to, is to hold these two hearings separately rather than together? From what you just told me of saying, well, if you're in deportation, authority is with the ALJ on the matter of adjustment of status, it sounds to me like they do it all together. That would be the normal process.
Well, under the facts of this case, what was done is the hearing was advanced based on motion following the instructions of the judge and set for 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
I think Judge Ripple, what Judge mm-hmm. Ripple is suggesting, I think, is that basically he has two grounds for resisting deportation, adjustment of status or asylum. So if a hearing is scheduled, why wouldn't it make sense for the service and for everybody concerned to have both of those grounds addressed in the same hearing? Why would you separate them?
I think under the facts of the specific facts of this case, Your Honor, and what was stated
in general, you seem to suggest that the usual rule is bifurcation. Why on earth would that wouldn't make any sense at all?
Under the facts of this case, Your Honor, it certainly looked like that's what was going to be adjudicated at 4 o'clock that afternoon. The adjustment application. The hearing was advanced for that matter. The other matters, there was no, as the board acknowledges in its opinion, Judge Zerbe didn't make clear what was going to be addressed that day. We look at the board's opinion, they say, yes, maybe he didn't make clear, then asserting, well, Mr. Azulay should have been prepared for both. But I would assert.
You may finish. I didn't mean to interrupt.
I again go back to the context of this case. When the matter has been set for November 99 for asylum, the judge said, if the number comes and you've got to get it done, file the motion, and I'll be inclined to grant you an adjustment hearing before the fiscal year ends. And then you get a notice saying, okay, I'm granting you, the number's reached, you file the motion, the hearing is set for 4 o'clock. You have to do a lot of preparation for that. You have to file applications. You got to get a medical examination. You have to pay fees. You have to tell your client you've got to be a question about this, this, and this. And you go into a hearing and you're called the morning of, say, oh, we want you at 1, not 4. Mr. Azulay called a trial by ambush, and I would say I would feel ambushed.
I want to speak to just for a second to the context, because I am concerned about that fairness argument, as I'm sure the panel is. The IJ allowed the recess. Do we have any indication that just 5-10 minutes, does record reflect?
It was all the same afternoon. I don't think it's the same time period from the record, if it was an hour, if it was 5 minutes.
Okay. Well,
I don't know. I wasn't there.
No, I understand.
It's not clear to me from the transcript how long it was.
All right.
It was all the same afternoon.
But they came back and informed the IJ they wouldn't proceed. Does record reflect why? Did he speak specifically to the extent of preparation necessary for asylum?
I believe Mr. Azulay said that he was not prepared for that, and he thought that he was not prepared for asylum that day. He thought it was simply going to be for adjustment of status
now,
that day.
Mr. Berg, there are a few more capable or experienced people in this field who appear before this court than you.
Thank you.
So as an officer of the court, can you give us just a sense of what preparation for an asylum would be?
As opposed to, in this case, there would be an in-depth analysis of the person's claim, probably a more detailed affidavit. Now, to look at this particular case, the judge said, I want his affidavit submitted, a statement submitted 2 weeks before the November hearing. So we would try to find an expert, and we would submit additional background and country materials, Amnesty International, Asia Watch, or other reports on Ukraine. To back up our claim and to back up the case. Then we would question the client and also question him the way he would be questioned under cross-examination. And it's a long, drawn-out process because it is, in this person's case, a life-and-death situation. His father was killed. He was severely beaten. So it would have involved a great deal of preparation, background material. There was also a brief that was required on the one-year issue. And that, of course, that date was set for 2 weeks before the November hearing. So the focus was clearly, at that point, August 27th, that Mr. Azulay, this is going to be an adjustment. Straightforward, and he was going to present the case. And certainly, I believe it was reasonable. As someone practicing immigration law for 20 years here in Chicago, I believe his conclusion was reasonable.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Byrd. Ms. Curtis?
May it please the Court, my name is Raina Curtis, and I represent the government in this matter, and the government is the respondent in this matter. Instead of getting right into my case, I just wanted to address a couple of the issues that you discussed with Mr. Berg. First of all, Mr. Berg said that at the time of the hearing that the numbers were current. That's incorrect. The numbers weren't current. In fact, the petitioner's lottery number was 26,096, and the numbers of visas available were 25,100. So he was a good 1,000 away from actually having a current visa available. Also, he mentioned that this case was solely for the purpose, or the August 27th, 1999 hearing was solely for the purpose of the adjustment hearing, and that is absolutely incorrect. And the reason that is because the petitioner himself had motioned, and the motion was entitled Emergency Motion to Advance Hearing. And in that motion, he stated that he wanted to advance the petitioner's next hearing to the earliest available date. The next hearing was the asylum hearing, which had been scheduled for November 5th, 1999. Even in that motion, which is located in the record at pages 130 through 133, it even says that the next hearing is the November 5th, 1999 hearing, which he understood to be the asylum hearing. So there's nowhere referenced in that motion that this expedited hearing is supposed to be for the sole purpose of the adjustment of status. So that is also incorrect. Also, as far as the time of day is concerned, I would agree that it is, unusual that you would expect an asylum hearing to take place at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. However, the court scheduled these all the time, and if the court needed additional time to hear more, then they could have continued the case and done so. From the record, it appears that way back when Ms. Cho had the master calendar hearing, that she had indicated to the judge that it was only going to be the petitioner testifying. I know that Mr. Berg has now said, well, we would have had an expert, and we would have had this, and we'd have gotten this additional documentation, but there's been no showing of any expert or additional documentation or additional testimony that wouldn't have been available at the August 27th, 1999 hearing.
Well, if you didn't plan on having asylum, Ms. Curtis, at that day, you might not have ordered up the most recent in-country report, if you didn't plan on it, even if your main and only witness was the petitioner, isn't it reasonable that you might have some supporting documentation that has a more current date than perhaps they had in hand? And after all, November was the focus, not August, right?
Originally, November was the focus, not August. However, I would say that it was unreasonable. I mean, we can't forget that the petitioner filed his asylum application on June 11, 1998, and he had already had one opportunity to present his case to the asylum officer. He did so. He, gave the asylum officer testimony, and obviously his case was not sufficient, and he was referred to removal proceedings, and then those started on September 9th, 1998, which was a full year before, this hearing took place. And he also, in between that time, he had three other continuances. He appeared pro se and got a continuance to obtain counsel. Then he had another hearing with the counsel, but the counsel wasn't prepared because she hadn't had the case long enough and wasn't quite sure what the petitioner was eligible for. And so then they came back again for another master calendar hearing, which was on March 23rd. And from March 23rd until August 27th was an additional 5 months to prepare the petitioner for anything that he needed to bring forward that day. And I do believe that it's unreasonable for the petitioner to maintain that he was unaware that the asylum hearing should have occurred on August 27th. If he wanted to limit the asylum hearing, the adjustment of status hearing, then he should have done so in his motion, and he didn't do that. Also, as far as the bifurcated cases go, unfortunately, I didn't bring any authority with me either, but I've been told by many people that all of these issues are handled at one case, and in fact, my director told me that they're never bifurcated, so I don't know if Mr. Berg can come forward with any authority, but it's not my understanding that they're ever bifurcated. So basically, back to, you know, my real issue here, which is, you know, whether or not the petitioner received an opportunity to be heard and whether or not the petitioner received a reasonable opportunity to present evidence in his case. And I would say he's had multiple opportunities to present evidence in his case. In fact, you know, he had the additional 5 months to prepare. He appeared in court. He's capable of testifying. He had his attorney with him. He was offered a recess to prepare to go forward that day. You were asking about, you know, the recess. The judge basically said, I'll give you a reasonable time to go out and you can prepare your client and then come back later on this afternoon and go ahead and go forward and basically preserve your rights for your application. And they adamantly refused to testify. And that's located on the record at 110 through 112. So they continued to petitioner as well as counsel refused to go forward. So the judge at that point felt that it was very important to make sure that the petitioner understood his rights, and he explained to the petitioner exactly what would happen, that this was directly affecting the rights of the petitioner, and he was encouraging the petitioner to go forward. And then the judge, even though the petitioner and his counsel had refused to take a recess and prepare, the judge took a recess anyway and told them to discuss the situation and to come back and tell them what they had decided. And they still came back and said that the petitioner would not give testimony or evidence in this case. Now, I want you just to assume for a minute that petitioner did get up and testify. His testimony could have been so consistent and so compelling that the judge would have granted his relief right there. Or, after his testimony, the judge could have determined, well, I do need to see some more corroborating documentation that the petitioner discussed in his testimony. Or, you know, perhaps an expert witness would assist petitioner in carrying his burden of proof. And at that point, the judge could have granted him an extension.
Curtis, on this particular day, did the immigration judge at any point specifically tell the applicant that it was now or never, that the case would in fact be closed?
Yes, he did. He specifically told the petitioner that if he did not testify on his application, that he would deem his applications abandoned. And he told petitioner, regardless of whether or not your attorney wants to do this with you or not, he said if he got on the stand that he would go through it with the petitioner as well, and they were told to take a recess and to discuss this. And they came back, and the petitioner stated that he didn't want to go forward, and he wouldn't go forward without his attorney. So he did know the consequences of what not testifying would be. And also, you know, was the petitioner, or did the petitioner have the opportunity to present the evidence? Absolutely. You know, it wasn't the judge who was preventing the petitioner from testifying. He didn't prevent him from putting on evidence or exclude a witness. It was the petitioner who was doing this. It was the petitioner who was refusing to testify, refusing to put on evidence. You know, he had documentation there that was attached to the back of his asylum application. He could have used it. He chose not to. I mean, he made a litigation choice, and he knew the consequences of this choice, and he made it anyway. Now, on the other hand, for instance, he did choose. He made the litigation choice to go forward on his voluntary departure claim or application. And he got on the stand. He was questioned by a counsel as well as opposing counsel as well as by the judge. And the judge granted his application for voluntary departure. you know, he refused to go forward on his other applications, and therefore, I can see that I'm running out of time here. I just wanted to quickly say that as far as prejudice is concerned, the petitioner is also required to come forward with concrete evidence of actual prejudice in this case, and he's completely...
Mr. Berg indicated that he met that by having the application for asylum in the record, which apparently is at least not a frivolous one.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that.
Well, Mr. Berg said that he met that burden by having the application for asylum in the record, and apparently that application is at least not a frivolous one.
Right. Actually, that's not the type of evidence that is considered for these types of for prejudice in due process cases. What it is petitioner needs to come forward with something that says, you know, this is a document that would have corroborated my testimony that day, and I didn't have this document, and this document would have assisted me in carrying my burden. This is a witness that would have testified to X, Y, and Z that would have also assisted me in proving that I have well-founded fear of returning to the Ukraine. He hasn't given this court any concrete evidence that would support an allegation of a due process violation. So I would say that not only has he not proven that there was a due process violation, but he also has not provided this court with any evidence of actual prejudice. So there is no concrete evidence of actual prejudice. And I would ask that this court deny the petitioner's motion, or deny the petition for review.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Ms. Berg, I think your time has expired. You may have 1 minute.
Very quickly, Your Honor, as to the numbers were current as of September 1st, several days later. That was made clear in the motion, and I believe it was clear in our brief as well. If I misspoke saying they were clear in August, I apologize. As to the motion, I believe it's clear on the face of the motion was an emergency motion for adjustment. It's all laid out at page 130 of the record why he was seeking that. Also, Judge Zerbe made clear at the March 1999 master calendar, if the number was reached, he would be inclined to advance it for an adjustment hearing. And I believe that's exactly what was done. Now, as to whether or not Mr. Kuchek should have gone forward when addressed by Judge Zerbe, he said himself, the judge told him that it is a complicated case. And if you look at the top of page 116, Mr. Kuchek says, Honorable Judge, you yourself said it was a complicated case. I can't make it. I can't make a decision to continue to go ahead with this matter. I trust my attorney. Here is an individual who does not know our legal system. He's retained an attorney. He's doing what he thought was best. And I would emphasize again, under the context of this case, I believe Mr. Azulay acted reasonably. Getting a notice that the hearing is set for 4 o'clock in response to his motion, the hearing be held on adjustment of status so the man could adjust before the end of the fiscal year. I thank you very much, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Berg. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.